We'll call the Senate Committee on Labor together. We have a public hearing today. We'll be hearing one bill, Senate Bill 756. We have a number of people who have signed up. If you wish to testify and have not signed up, there's an additional sign-up sheet at the table over on your left, and you may do so. I'm going to be leaving, in fact, about 1 minute, turn the committee over to Senator Hill for a little bit. I've got to go upstairs and testify on two of my bills, which have been scheduled conveniently, and Senator McCoy's Human Resources Committee at this time. So we'll pass the gavel and the witness list to Senator Hill and ask him to call the first witness.
Okay, we'll open. Let's see, did we already open? Go ahead and open the hearing on Senate Bill 756. I'd like to ask the proponents, or some of the proponents, to come on up, Michael. Sandra Ely, is Sandra with you? To open up the discussion. And do you have a video?
Yes, Mr. Chair. If I may, I'd like to begin our testimony with some of the words of one of the workers that's been affected by this important problem. I'm going to only play about the first 5 minutes of the video because of the time constraints, but...
You might want to turn that more so we can see it better. Just a little bit. That's fine. That's fine.
This testimony is from Leticia... Tamez, who's a migrant farm worker from Far, Texas, and from Adrian, Oregon.
And how old are you?
I'm 23 years old.
Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and your family?
Yeah, I was raised with eight brothers, four sisters, and I have two little girls and one.
How old are your children?
My oldest is 6, middle one is 5, and my younger twin is
10. Have you worked in the fields before?
Yes, I've been working in the fields before.
What kind of crops have you done in Oregon?
Oregon, we've been planting onion fields, sugar beets, and
have you worked in other states too?
Yes, we worked in California.
Okay. Have you ever been exposed to pesticides?
Yes, in three different times.
Can you tell me a little bit about the first time you were exposed to pesticides?
We were working with him, chicken beef. And across the street there was a chicken beef. And it was almost midnight, I talked about the morning prayer. And at that time, the airplane was already, had started to spray sugar beet across the street. And my dad had called us for break. We were walking on the side of the road, getting to our cars. And at that time, the airplane, made the last pass, and it passed by above. And then it was spraying like this yellow mush powder. At that time, when I saw those passing by above us, I covered myself with a jacket. Some of the other workers that were with me, we did that. So as soon as we got to our vehicles, some of them, felt dizzy, and some of them, started vomiting. And they started, they were like taking out. And at that time, my brother started vomiting. And everything he would eat, he would start vomiting.
What does dizzying out mean?
Dizzying out is like feeling real dizzy, real weak. Really stupid.
Which brother of yours was it that got sick?
Okay, it was when I'm teacher too.
Where were you doing the work? Where was it you were working?
We were working by King Avenue.
Go ahead and tell me more about it.
Okay, at that time, you know, some of them were filming, you know, what to see in the moment. So my brother, and I had someone else, I was going to say, he didn't have any confidence he couldn't take. So when we went back to work, you know, when I was turned down to look down and all that, I had, you know, I was hurting, I felt like it was all like you had to be kidding. Well, for a couple of days, you know, I felt real sick, I felt lonely, I didn't go to work. My brother was still vomiting, my little niece, Glenn, was vomiting too. My sister and I, mean, was, you know, she was still sick. My sister-in-law, you know, at that time, she was pregnant. And, you know, she, her and my sister-in-law, I mean, you know, had this rash. You know, they developed a rash, you know. They went to see a doctor. That time they were, you know, letting the spray because their anxiety was, you know, the spray. At that time, you know, they had developed that much.
Did you have any reason to fear anything, any other bad effects of pesticide?
Yes, at that time, me and my husband, you know, when I was a baby boy, and at that time, we were trying to have a, for me to get pregnant. And at that time I couldn't, and to me I thought it was following me. So at that time I went to see the doctor, and he said everything was okay with me. There was nothing wrong. So at that time I thought it was following that spray, which spray. And when I went to see the doctor, and everything, you know, well, we decided that there was something wrong. There had to be, you know, like if I can see if I can.
In the balance of the videotape, Ms. Tomez goes on to describe two other occasions on which she was poisoned by pesticide spray overdrift. Fortunately, the problem she was describing at the end of the tape wasn't something that materialized, and it happened that the second time she was sprayed, she was pregnant. She gave birth to a son who is completely normal, but not without a great deal of worry in the meantime. In the second incident, there was a four-year-old who was in the field with his family at the time the spraying incident occurred. She also describes the unhappiness of her labor contractor with the fact that a report was made of this incident. Now, the labor contractor was not responsible for the spray. It was an independent spray company. But it wound up that the labor contractor got cited for failure to remove folks from the field, and so because of that, he was unhappy with the workers who had come forward and made a report. She also describes problems that she had in obtaining information about what this yellowish cloud of stuff that dropped on them was, both from her own contractor and from the employer. She describes a third incident where actually no action administratively was ever taken because of the fear of retaliation on the part of other workers who were involved in the incident, and without their support she felt she could not really be able to maintain any kind of complaint, and so no administrative action was ever taken in that third incident. She also talks at the end of the tape about the value of notice to her as a worker. She now lives on a farm in a house that's on the farm in the middle of fields that are commonly sprayed, and the farmer that her husband works for at this point makes it a point of always notifying his workers of what's going to be sprayed and when, and that allows her to get her children inside or out away from the house when spraying is going to occur, and she really values that. Unfortunately, that situation may be atypical, and indeed, the whole situation of Ms. Tomez is very atypical. It's atypical in a number of respects. She has 10 years of formal education in the United States, speaks English fluently, and but for the collapse of the border economy, probably would not be in agriculture today. Probably doesn't see herself as trapped by the need to continue to come to the same area in Adrian and Nissa, where she's and her family have worked for years and years and years. So it's atypical in that respect. Her lack of fear in making the reports and in agreeing to make this video to present to you today is also atypical. And it's our experience that many incidents of pesticide exposure probably don't get reported, partly because of denial and partly because of fear. And it's the point of this bill, Senate Bill 756, to remove some of the obstacles, some of the fear, and to try to get some self-regulation into the field of pesticide health and safety. I'd like to now turn to the specific provisions of the bill to just explain briefly what the bill hopes to accomplish. Under present law, to use a restricted-use pesticide, one must be certified as a private applicator or have a license as a commercial applicator. However, that's only to get the ability to purchase and apply the material. Actual application can be done by someone who is not so licensed, so long as he's operating under the supervision of the certified or licensed applicator. Unfortunately, current law says that under the supervision of means only someone is available by telephone. And what this bill does is attempts to tighten that up a bit to say that if you're going to use unlicensed, uncertified folks to apply dangerous chemicals, that that you need to be there, present, with the ability to perceive a problem and to stop it if it goes awry. Secondly, record keeping. The present commercial applicators and operators are required to keep records of the pesticides they apply. Under a new amendment to the federal farm bill this past fall, there's an additional requirement that private applicators, certified private applicators, establish a record keeping system to keep track of the application of restricted use pesticides that they apply. This bill goes just a little bit farther than that and says that if you're required to set up the system because you're a licensed applicator, that you keep records of all the pesticides, all the controlled pesticides you apply, and not just the restricted use pesticides. In terms of aerial application, one of the things that would be helpful for medical personnel is if those records were kept in a chronological log so that from knowing time, place, and date, someone could quickly access the necessary information about what had been applied rather than having to dig through a variety of different files, and this legislation would require that kind of record keeping. The records that would be kept would be available to three kinds of people. They would be available to workers, and they would be available to medical personnel that were treating those workers for pesticide exposure. And finally, they would be available to anyone who had a reasonable, good faith belief that they had been exposed to a pesticide. Now, workers could access that information directly. Actually, if it's the employer who applied the pesticide, they have that right currently under right-to-know laws. The problem is one of retaliation, and this sets up a procedure whereby the worker could certify a representative through an appropriate agency. As it's drafted here, it would be the Department of Agriculture. Might be that a different agency, perhaps BOLI or OSHA, might be more suitable, and we're having some discussions in terms of where the where that ought to reside. But basically, you could get a representative certified as being someone that did represent a worker who could then have access to those records. We've also had some discussion with the Department of Agriculture concerning the scope of what records you could get. It's our intent, as proponents of the bill, that the records you could get were the ones that applied to you and your own personal situation. And it may be that some narrowing language needs to be worked out with the Department of Agriculture on that. Okay, next, under current law, if one is to sue a pesticide operator, a commercial applicator, in other words, there's a requirement that a notice be given within 60 days to the Department of Agriculture, or you lose your right to sue. The Department of Agriculture has always taken the position, as I understand it, that that applied to crop loss and property damage, but not to actions for personal injury. However, most lawyers, tort lawyers, who have looked at that statute feel that it applies by its terms to personal injury actions as well. And Section 4 attempts to make it clear that the Department of Agriculture could still investigate personal injury type claims, although they should involve the Health Department in doing, or the Division of Health in doing so, but that the 60-day requirement is not jurisdictional. In other words, one would not lose the right to sue if you didn't request the investigation within 60 days. Under current workers' comp law, in general, if a worker, of course, is injured on the job, there's no cause of action to sue the employer for negligence or so forth in the injury. You have a workers' comp remedy. It's a modest remedy, but that's the only remedy you have. There's an exception for that, for injury which is willfully caused, intentionally caused. This bill takes that exemption from the bar to suit and makes it a little bit broader, or it carries it a step further. And it basically says that if someone knowingly applies a pesticide in an unsafe manner, contrary to the label restrictions, or if the worker has not been given the required training about pesticide health and safety required by state law, then if the worker subsequently injured as a result of that, that's tantamount to an intentionally caused injury, and there would be no bar to suit. Now, I can guarantee you this will be a controversial provision. As a lawyer, I would submit to the committee that it is unlikely we will see very many cases brought under this provision, and those that are brought under the provision will be very difficult cases indeed, because those are high standards to meet. But I think what we will do is get the attention of the agricultural community with respect to this, and we'll have a lot more attention being paid to disclosure of proper protective gear, disclosure of proper protective practices, and conformance with the requirements of labeling in the application of pesticides. Section 9 creates kind of an analog to a hit-and-run provision. And that basically says if you're licensed by the state or you're certified by the state as an applicator, and you know that there's been a pesticide mishap where pesticides have been handled or applied not in conformance to the law, that you have a duty to come forward and report that to the Department of Agriculture. The bill would require that the Department of Agriculture's training and certification program include three new areas of focus. One would be the acute and chronic health risks associated with exposure to pesticide. Secondly, first aid treatment that would be effective in alleviating those chronic and long-term effects, or acute and long-term effects. And then finally, instruction on integrated pest management techniques to minimize the use of toxic chemicals for pest control. Finally, the bill would explicitly provide that it would be unlawful to discharge, intimidate, or in any manner discriminate against a person for providing information regarding pesticide use, for exercising any right or performing any duty under the pesticide laws, or for discussing what your rights and duties are with a lawyer or anyone else. And it would create a cause of action to enforce that right. At this point, if the committee has any questions about the provisions of the bill, I'd be happy to respond.
Are there questions at this point, Mr. Dale?
And I'd like to introduce Sandra Ely.
My name is Sandra Ely. I'm a graduate student at the University of Oregon in environmental studies with an emphasis in environmental health. I'm also a registered nurse. Oregon agriculture, as I see it, is heavily dependent on the services of migrant and seasonal farm laborers. Farm labor is a hazardous job, not only for the workers who have to deal with physical labor, hard physical labor, long hours, sun exposure, and dehydration. They are subject to pesticide exposure as well. Pesticides are toxic chemicals that are deliberately applied to the environment to kill a target pest, such as weeds, insects, and fungus. Unfortunately, these chemicals are not always specific to their target and can have adverse effects on the surrounding environment and human populations. And what population could be more vulnerable to the adverse health effects of pesticides than the worker? Studies from other Western states indicate that farm laborers are being exposed to pesticides and that they are suffering from this exposure. To my knowledge, before my research last summer, there had been no studies done concerning field workers and pesticide exposure in the state of Oregon. Last summer, I performed a study with the financial help of a worker advocacy group in Southern Oregon named Salud, and with the advice and guidance from the faculty at the University of Oregon. The purpose of the study was to find out if farm laborers in Oregon were being exposed to pesticides, if so, at what frequency, and are there any acute physical manifestations from this exposure? The methods I used in the study are fairly straightforward. I developed a survey made up of questions regarding work history, demographic information, and the presence of symptoms that may be related to pesticide exposure. To aid in memory recall, most of the questions pertain to events that occurred only within the 3 months prior to the interview. I and five bilingual surveyors performed face-to-face interviews with 49 migrant and seasonal workers, primarily in Marion, Washington, and Hood River counties. This group is called the Spray Group throughout the survey, and I compared the responses from this group with the responses from interviews with 35 farm laborers on farms that had not been sprayed with conventional pesticides. This comparison group is called the No Spray Group. And it's important to use a comparison group in this type of study in order to differentiate the effects of farm labor in general from the physical effects that might be from the pesticides themselves. The survey showed that farm workers in the county surveyed were being exposed to pesticides. 31% of the workers I interviewed stated that they were being exposed either by drift or directly by overspray within the 3 months prior to the survey, and it was an average of about 1.4 times. This is in violation of the current federal farm worker protection standards for agricultural pesticides, which prohibits the spraying of workers. 51% of the workers in the spray group stated that they had entered the field within 2 days of treatment. One-third of those that entered the field within 48 hours of treatment stated that the dust had not settled for pesticides that were in powder form, and approximately 60% stated that the spray had not dried for pesticides that were in liquid form. Again, this is in violation of the Farm Worker Protection Standards, which states that the worker is not to enter a field until the sprays have dried and the dust has settled. Survey also shows that workers are not being provided with adequate washing facilities, which would limit the worker's ability to decontaminate his or herself in the event of pesticide exposure. Of the workers who were exposed by drift, about 50% did not have wash-up facilities available to them. And for those entering a field within 2 days of treatment, 62% did not have wash-up facilities available to them. According to Oregon's field sanitation rules, the employer is required to provide accessible wash-up facilities. The results of the study also show that Oregon farm workers are not receiving adequate safety training. Only about a third of the workers in the spray group had ever received any information on pesticide safety, and only one quarter knew the names of any pesticide that they had worked with or around. The Oregon Hazard Communication Law requires the employer to provide the farm worker with the manual, Safe Practices When Working Around Hazardous Chemicals. When the workers were shown this manual, only one quarter stated they had ever seen it before. The results of this study also show that farm workers in the spray group were suffering from more symptoms and more frequently than workers in the no spray group. There was a statistically significant difference between the groups in the percentage of workers suffering from such symptoms as flushing of the skin, red and watery eyes, excessive saliva, itching, skin rash, and nausea and vomiting. These are only acute symptoms that I was looking at here. Workers on the spray farms also sought medical attention more frequently and lost more days from work due to illness than the workers on the no-spray farm. Farm workers in Oregon are being needlessly and illegally exposed to pesticides. They are not provided with adequate field sanitation, and they are not provided with sufficient instructions on how to work around pesticides. The short-term results of these inadequate working conditions is manifested primarily as an excess in dermatological symptoms and other acute symptoms for the worker. We do not know what the long-term effects of this exposure are. It seems obvious that one of the solutions to this problem is better enforcement of the existing laws. Many of the laws on the books are good in that they are meant to protect the worker, but they are not being adequately enforced. One of the reasons for the lack of enforcement lies with the farm worker. Workers are reluctant to complain about work conditions for various reasons, including language barriers, fear of courting disfavor with the grower, and simple lack of knowledge on how the system works. Another reason for the lack of enforcement lies with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. A recent study performed by Neva Haasen at the University of Oregon reports on the efficacy of enforcement at the ODA plant division. The report indicates that enforcement of FIFRA, the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, by the plant division is generally inadequate. Neva found that the major problem was a serious delay at the pesticide enforcement program in completing cases once they are initiated. Of the 398 cases initiated in 1987, only 22% were completed by 1988. 26 of these cases were part cases, and only 3 were complete. I have submitted a copy of this report for the record, if you're interested. I believe Senate Bill 756 would help in enforcing some of the existing laws, specifically those limiting worker exposure. This bill could create another avenue of recourse for the worker by allowing the worker to sue when pesticides are applied illegally and result in personal injury. It would also allow the worker, to see that something is being done about violations that appear to go unchecked. Migrant and seasonal laborers have been working under unacceptable and illegal conditions for too long, and it is time to give them some leverage to help turn the situation around. That is my testimony. Are there any questions?
Just one as an observation, really.
Uh-huh.
Oregon OSHA is the agency responsible for enforcing the laws that your study suggests are being violated?
Some of the laws. The FIFRA, which has the Federal Farm Worker Regulations, are regulated by the Oregon Department of Agriculture. The field sanitation laws do fall under Oregon OSHA. That is correct.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Do you have a copy of your study? Okay. We have a number of people who signed up as representing PCCUN. Mr. Ramirez, would you like to bring up your people? Jose Galvin? Is it Larry? Or you came in after we collected the list? Thank you. Are you... Okay, you have videos.
Right.
You want to start while they set that up?
Yes. My name is Ramon Ramirez. I'm a vice president of BECUN, which is Northwest Tree Planters of Farm Workers United. We're a farm worker union of 2,900 members. We also have members in the nursery industry and reforestation. And basically, we work to improve the living and working conditions of farm workers throughout the state. And we are here today to express our support for Senate Bill 756. As a farm worker organization, we are very much concerned with the issues of pesticides. As farm workers, we are the most vulnerable to the effects of pesticides. Every day we go to work, we come in contact with them. Although pesticides are toxins intended to kill and control pests and plant, abundant evidence indicates that these toxins pose grave threats to human health. Each year in the United States, pesticides cause illness to an estimated 300,000.